this point, I'd like to introduce our speaker. The committee has asked Gordon Jay from the Let's Reason Together group of NA from the Pasadena area to speak.
Hey everyone, I'm Gordon, I'm an addict. I'd like to first thank Drew for thinking about me, this committee thinking about me, giving me another opportunity to share my experience, strength, and hope. And that's all I have is my experience, strength, and hope. I don't have the mysteries to life or none of that stuff. And I want to thank God for everything. I get overwhelmed with this stuff, man. I've been doing this Zoom stuff for a minute here. I've been being called to share, and I've been on the bench for a while, right? And so it seems like God is just taking me off the bench and putting me back in the game. Because for some reason or another, I backed off this speaking stuff, man. I used to speak all over the place, and I think I started getting big-headed and all that old stuff. So I had to really take my inventory and really realize what this was about. This is not about ego inflation. It's not about competition. It's about trying to help the still suffering addict, and that might be somebody on that screen. That could even be me, right? I believe in this book, Narcotics Anonymous, the basic text. We have a lot of literature, but they call this the basic text. This is basic information, right? And I had to get with this basic information before I could jump into all that other stuff. My clean date is January 15th of 1991. So I've been around here a minute, right? I've seen some things. I just want to read the introduction. This introduction always kind of puts me into the spirit of what this is all about. And it says, this book is the shared experience of the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. We welcome you to read this text, hoping that you will choose to share with us the new life that we have found. We have by no means found a cure for addiction. We offer only a proven plan for daily recovery. In NA, we follow a program adapted from Alcoholics Anonymous. More than 1 million people have recovered in AA, most of them just as hopelessly addicted to alcohol as we were to drugs. We are grateful to the AA Fellowship for showing us the way to a new life. The 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous as adapted from AA are the basis of our recovery program. We have only broadened their perspective. We follow the same path with a single exception. Our identification as addicts is all inclusive with respect to any mood changing, mind altering, substance. Alcoholism is too limited a term for us. Our problem is not a specific substance. It is a disease called addiction. We believe as a fellowship, we have been guided by a greater consciousness and are grateful for the direction that has enabled us to build upon a proven program of recovery. We come to Narcotics Anonymous by various means and believe that our common denominator is that we fail to come to terms with our addiction. Because of the variety of addicts found within our fellowship, we approach the solution contained within this book in general terms. We pray that we have been searching and thorough so that every addict who reads this volume will find the hope that we have found. And this is the part that always knocks me out. Based on our experience, we believe that that every addict, including the potential addict, suffers from an incurable disease of body, mind, and spirit. We were caught in the grip of a hopeless dilemma, the solution of which is spiritual in nature. Therefore, this book will deal with spiritual matters. We are not a religious organization. Our program is a set of spiritual principles through which we are recovering from a seamlessly hopeless state of mind and body. Throughout the compiling of this work, we pray, God grant us knowledge that we may write according to your divine precepts. Instill in us a sense of your purpose. Make us servants of your will and grant us a bond of selflessness that this may truly be your work, not ours, in order that no addict anywhere need die from the horrors of addiction. Everything that occurs in the course of NA service must be motivated by the desire to more successfully carry the message of recovery to the addict who still suffers. It was for this reason that we began this work. We must always remember that as individual members, groups, and service committees, we are not and should never be in competition with each other. We work separately and together to help the newcomer and for our common good. We have learned painfully that internal strife cripples our fellowship. It prevents us from providing the services necessary for growth. It is our hope that this book will help the suffering addict find the solution that we have found. Our purpose is to remain clean just for the day and carry the message of recovery. And I get emotional just reading that, man. Can you imagine some people sitting around writing that kind of stuff? That just didn't come out of their head. You know, there was some kind of divine intervention that took place in this situation. I really believe that, right? And tell you a little bit about, I don't tell my story as much as I used to, but I'm going to tell a little bit of my story, right? My story is jails and institutions, right? And I know everybody ain't been in jails and institutions and all that stuff, right? But you may not have been in a physical prison or a physical jail, but think about the jail that you created in your own mind. The jail that, and I was in a prison within a prison, right? And it didn't always start out that way. I come up in the 50s and transpired into the 60s, and I come up under all the Black Power stuff and the Black Panther stuff and all that stuff, right? And the consciousness and the a flyer child and, you know, free love and free drugs and all that stuff. I come up under that kind of stuff, right? But I was talking on a meeting the other day, man. I was talking about it, and we were on the fourth step, and I might run all over the place because all I do is pray and show up. But and we were talking about past regrets. I think it was just for the day yesterday. We were talking about past regrets and remorse and all that stuff, right? And I was talking about, you know, being around here while I'm doing some step work and all that kind of stuff, man. Those regrets and remorse and all that stuff, man, it don't go nowhere. Even though I have, you know, addressed it, I've resolved some stuff through step work on several times, still do step work, it hasn't went anywhere. It's just the residue. There's a residue, man, that always kind of resurfaces and it always want to take me back and tell me that you ain't all that. You know, after almost 30 years around here, now I understand why people with time can relapse, right? Because if I don't deal with the things that's been haunting me all my life, if I don't do the step work that I need to do, man, that stuff is going to resurface and it's going to take me out of here, right? I remember as a child, I was kind of happy, joyous and free. You know, we were poor. I didn't know that. And I come up in the district down on the hill, long time ago where the arena used to be. We used to live down there before they even tore that stuff down. So I'm kind of dating myself. But and I was a happy, joyous little kid. And then some things start happening in my family, right? My mother and my father got divorced. And for some reason or another, I took that stuff on, right? And I felt like it was my fault. I was always trying to get them together and all this stuff, right? And I think in doing my step work, I kind of see where that's when I start withdrawing from the world. You know, our literature talks about we isolated ourselves. We withdrew. We were cut off from the sharing experience. I kind of see that now, you know, as I do step work and I reflect and I do the work. And so I started withdrawing, man, and I had secrets. You know, my feelings, I could never express my feelings, and I isolated myself. I would go to school, and, you know, the teacher would say, where's Pennsylvania on the map, right? And I knew where Pennsylvania was, but I'd never raise my hand. I'd sit in the back. It was this fear. It was this fear of being, you know, the fear of self-disclosure. That's what our steps talk about, the fear of self-disclosure. And I walked through life like that. And I'm starting to understand that what we call the self-centered fear. right? And as time went on, I started getting into the criminal activities. I found some guys that were just like me. We were all insecure and shaky, but we presented ourselves like we had it going on, right? We dressed to impress and all that stuff. And I remember my first bout with jail, I threw some rocks. I threw some rocks at we were down on the railroad tracks, me and some of my buddies. And we was throwing rocks at the windows and stuff, right? And they start running. And I'm wondering, why are they running? And next thing I know, here come they used to call them back in the day, the railroad cops, right? And they picked me up and took me to juvie and all this stuff. And that was the beginning. Something happened to me then. I don't know. I can't put my finger on it, but something happened. I bit into a way of life that was destructive. And I went on through that kind of life for a long, long time, right? I remember at the age of 18, I found myself in a penitentiary. I said, now how the hell did I get here? I wasn't biting it. I wasn't trying to go in a penitentiary, right? 18 years old, but there were some people down there that knew me and they started calling my name. I felt like I'm good. Got out of that place. And it seemed like I always went back to the same stuff. I'd always go back to the set. I'd always go back to my old people, places, and things, right? And then I get arrested again and go to jail again. I found myself in Huntington somewhere. I was just all over the place. I made like the horn. I don't want to take y'all all through penitentiaries and stuff, right? But I saw a lot of stuff. And the last time I got arrested, I'll just give you the last couple of weeks of my addiction, man, it was horrible. My addiction, it took me to a place where I didn't even recognize myself. I would walk past a mirror and say, who the hell is that? I couldn't look myself in the mirror. You know, I'd wash my face and couldn't look myself in the eyes. I was so embarrassed. It was so degrading. Right. And I never volunteered for that stuff. Right. And I just did a topic on victims, volunteers, or willing participants. And what I found out that I was a victim, not only of my environment, you know, I don't want to blame it on my environment, but I was a victim of my circumstances, of my choices. I made some bad choices. I mean, I knew there was some stuff instilled in me when I was young, the good and the bad, the moral stuff and all that stuff, the golden rule and all that stuff was instilled in me, man, but something inside of me, and our literature talks about it in the black book, it talks about there's that something inside of us that keeps crying out, makes us prone to obsession and compulsion, right? And that something inside of me always took me down the wrong path. And I think, but now I'm starting to understand as I continue to do the work and study, and they always talk about it, you hear this all the time, the life on life's terms, the fear of living. The second step talks about now we have to deal with the pain of living without the use of drugs. Life can be painful sometimes. Life throws me curveballs sometimes, right? And in the beginning, I didn't know how to do that. I didn't know how to deal. I never went up the bat. I'd always get out the game. And just run away from life. And when the drugs came along, I was like tailor-made for it. You know, it made me feel like, all right, I can deal. Because what it did, it made me oblivious to reality. I was always caught up in this fantasy. What if only and just one more time? Or it won't be that bad this time. Every time I would come out of one of them jails, or one of them institutions, one of them detoxes, I'd always say, I'm not using, I don't care what happened, and I would find myself right back in the same spot. I never understood what that was about. You know, I remember being diagnosed by the parole board one time, and they were telling me, why do you use drugs? Why do you shoot heroin? I said, because I like to get high. They asked me the dumb questions, right? I couldn't tell them that, you know, I'd suffer from addiction. I got obsession and compulsion. I couldn't tell them that. I didn't know none of that stuff, right? And they told me some stuff like, well, we think you're antisocial and you don't like me. You know, they went into all that stuff, you know, paranoid schizophrenia. They just call me all kinds of stuff. This book talks about our disease. Where is it? Oh, listen to this. We did not choose to become addicts. We suffer from a disease that expresses itself in ways that are antisocial and that makes detection, diagnosis, and treatment difficult. This is a difficult disease that we suffer from. This is a complex disease that we suffer from, right? And so and as time went on, man, and I found myself at the end, that's where I was at. I was at the end. I'm sitting in this bar, hopeless. And I got like three habits. I got an alcohol habit. I got a heroin habit. I got a cocaine habit. I don't know which one to do first. I mean, it was just a mess, right? And I'm sitting in this bar. This always comes up. And this guy, he say, remember that guy I told you I found in the dead of winter last night and up there in the woods? And the guy said, yeah, I remember. He said, that's him right there. Was talking about me. And man, something inside of me just turned. My whole insides just turned. But the disease of addiction is such a powerful and cunning enemy of life. He said, oh man, don't worry about that. That was last year. Come on, let's go cop. And I continued on the road, man, until at the end, I found myself back in one of those penitentiaries. And I was sitting on the bunk bed and I was in the cell by myself. This voice, and I know what it is now. It's that spiritual that conscious, you know, that nagging voice that always nags at you, always nags at you. And it said, what you gonna do now? After 25 years of addiction, in and out of jails and penitentiary institutions and detoxes, it said, what you gonna do now? I don't believe that the spirit dies. I hear people say, well, I spiritually did. Well, I don't bite on that. But my belief system is that the spirit doesn't die, but it gets suppressed, right? And it can't come alive, man, because of the disease of addiction, again, is a power greater than ourselves. So it suppresses everything that was spiritual in me. I'll try and get to that in a minute. And I sat on that bed, I said, I don't know what I'm going to do. I literally said this like I'm talking to you. It was in the middle of the night. I said, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm not going to do what I've been doing. And what I found out, and I think maybe my first sponsor told me about that, he said, man, that was the first time that you made a heartfelt surrender. You didn't know what you were surrendering to, but you surrendered. There's something, if some of you guys have been around a while, you know when you're done. There's something in your spirit that tells you it's over. It's over. But again, this, here it goes. This disease is so powerful. It'll come back after years. It was never left nowhere because it lives within us. But it will resurface and tell you that this ain't paying off. Right? And then once I start thinking like that, I get start getting obsessed, man. It takes me back to that fixed idea. Next thing I know, I'm entertaining some stuff and I don't have anything to be in. I don't have any business entertaining. Thank God for the step work. So what happened in that jail, I ran into some people that were in recovery and they were going to NA and I used to see them out in the yard. And they'd be all huddled up. And I used to think there was some kind of religious group. They'd be sitting over there and they'd be talking and laughing. And I'd be like, what's wrong with them? And one guy, I'll never forget him. He used to always walk by me. When I'd see him in the yard, anywhere I'd seen him in the jail, he would say, man, ain't you done yet? And I said, what do you mean, ain't I done yet? He said, ain't you just sick and tired of being sick and tired? He's giving me all that kind of language. And I didn't understand that language, right? And as God would have it, he placed my first sponsor in my life. And I started going to meetings in that penitentiary. And I acquired something like 18 months or 17 months. And I was chairing a meeting down there, me and one of my buddies, God bless him. And we had Dot Talley come in and speak for us. And she was speaking at our meeting. And some of you older guys know Dot Talley. She was a pioneer around here. And she was speaking, and I was giving, after she got done, I was giving a farewell speech, and because I was leaving in a couple of weeks, right? And no, it wasn't Dot Talley, it was another guy. Dot Talley was down there the year before that. Anyway, I'm giving a speech to the guys. Yeah, I'm getting ready to go home, man, and I really appreciate y'all. And they just giving me the rah, rah, rah. And the guy that we had speaking, he said, man, when you come home, why don't you come and speak for me? I said, what? I ain't coming to speak. And everybody said, oh, man, go on and speak. Go on and tell them what we're doing down here, blah, 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 blah. And I come home. My clean date was January 15, 91. I come home in August of 92. And it was a Sunday, and I'll never forget it. It was a Sunday. It was 10 o'clock, just like this. And I went into this place called 951 down there in Pittsburgh, and I spoke. And I shared to the best of my ability. And I'm here to tell y'all, man, I'm not bragging or boasting or none of that stuff, man. But from that day all the way to the day, I've been speaking ever since. And that's not because I'm this great speaker and all. That's not what that's about. I believe that the truth touches the truth. You know, we share our experience, strength, and hope. My truth touches your truth. Your truth touches my truth. You know, and there's a little bit of truth in all of y'all that touched me. And I know there's some of my truth that touches somebody here. Right? And when I came home, I wasn't real sure about this stuff because I come from a, you know, fellowship in the penitentiary. Everybody looked the same. We all wore the same stuff, you know, browns and robes and all that stuff. Wasn't no women to distract you. So I was really focused. Even to the day, you know, I got this discipline. When I come into a meeting, if I come in late, I'm not coming in upsetting the meeting with all that hugging and while people are in the meeting sharing, you know, I see that. I get so disgusted. But that's the thing, I'm proud. But I got this discipline where I come in, I get whatever I got to get. I go to the bathroom and I sit my monkey butt down. And I sit in the front. Even to the day, I sit in the front. Because I still need that critical care. We used to call it the critical care unit up front, right? And so what happened was when I came home, I was kind of wishy-washy about it because I was insecure. That's the word. I was insecure about, you know, you guys were out here and it seemed like you were doing real good. You had the big cars and the women and all that stuff. And I was judging my insides by your outsides. Right? And so I started getting these bright ideas, which never paid off. Thank God I didn't get into the game and all that stuff because I had some people that really looked out for me. But something started happening. I started hearing things and I started, you know, even though I was still speaking and all that stuff, I had to come to believe once again that this was for me. Right? And our second step, it says that the purpose of the second step is to fill the void. That's the purpose of the second step. It says, like, you know, the first step, and I'll talk a little bit about the steps. When I first started doing the steps, you know, the first step, it was like I needed a power. I needed a power of example. I needed an example to show me how to be powerless. You know what I mean? And my sponsor used to always, I'd call him with all kinds of craziness, and he would tell me stuff like this. Well, go tell the group that stuff and see what they tell you, right? And that's where I learned how to start sharing with the group. I mean, on an honest level, you know, not just that surface stuff, but talking about exactly what was going on with me. And there was a lot of stuff going on with me, man. There was a lot of insecurities and stuff that was going on. Just to talk about some stuff that started happening in recovery. I was unemployable, right? I was the kind of addict, didn't do any work and none of that stuff. I was more of a leech. I was a thief. I was just trying to get over the best way I can. And I didn't have a work history and none of that stuff. And somebody said, man, it's time for you to get a job. You know, you didn't get clean to be no bum. You know, it's time to get a job. You got to get off the welfare, man. Right? And so I said, well, I don't have any work history. I don't know how to fill out no application. And he said, well, you were in jail all the time. I said, yeah. He said, well, what did you do in jail? I said, well, I was a laundry man. I did maintenance. And he said, well, put that on the application. I thought that was the dumbest thing I ever heard, right? And I remember my first job in recovery, I used to be a silk screen cleaner. I was cleaning silk screens, you know, and the guy on the application says, have you ever been convicted of a felon before? And I said, yeah, and we'll explain if interviewed. And so the guy called me and he said, man, I want to interview for this job. He said, and I told him on the application, I said, yes, and I'm in recovery. I go to NA. I kind of broke my anonymity right there and then, right? And he said, well, what's this recovery stuff about? What's this NA stuff about? And that was my opportunity to do a little mini lead. And I started telling him about, you know, a little bit about my life. He said, man, I'm a guy of second chances. He said, I'm going to give you a chance. And I swear to God, he said I was the best silk screen cleaner he had ever had in 20 years, right? I was so grateful. I'd come in the job happy, and you know how we do. I was coming, God bless you, and you know, have a great day and all that just for the day. And you know, the people just took to that. You'd be surprised how our recovery, man, it's deep, right? And for 18 months, I was the happiest guy in that plant. And that next 18 months, I was miserable. It's time to go. I couldn't take it no more. Right? And so I start praying and, you know, I start speaking into it. And this guy said, man, there's a job at this hospital for a drug and alcohol outreach worker. Why don't you come up and apply? It was a great big hospital, right? So I went up there and I applied and I gave him the same little spiel. And they said, well, we're sorry, sir, but we can't use you, but we'll keep your application on file. And I left there, man. I was so discouraged. I was so downhearted. I was so broken. I was telling some of my support group. And they said this. It's something about you guys in recovery. You guys got some of the most simplest answers. And they said, maybe it wasn't time yet, Gordon. Just real simple. I said, apply again in 6 months. I applied the next 6 months. And I swear it was like I never applied before. They said, we'd be glad to have you, sir. And when can you start? And blah, 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 blah. Right? I was like, I'm done. That was, back then, that was the sign for me to show me, man, that there was a power working in my life long before I understood it. Something was going on in my life and I couldn't, all I knew it, I was just doing the footwork. They used to tell us, do the footwork and God will be in the results. Right? And if it's time, it's time. And so what happened, what transpired from that job, I became a director, associate director of behavioral health in another facility. Now listen to this. I got some college experience, but I don't have any degrees. I don't have no letters behind my name. My letters is like Gordon, the addict, right? That's what the letters I got, right? but now today, I sit at tables, man, with psychiatrists and psychologists and behavioral specialists and here we go. When I was doing the outreach work for the homeless, this guy, he used to do the job that I was doing and he moved on to become a parole officer. And a couple of years after he left the job, he called me and he said, Gordon, he said, I got a guy in the penitentiary that needs a program. Can you come down with me and help me get this guy to a program? I said, what? He said, yeah. I said, to the penitentiary. He said, yeah. I said, I ain't going nowhere. No, right? Because, you know, and I said, you know, I could build up the courage. And I went in there, and I swear, man, I'm getting chills just talking about it. This is just some of the experiences that happened in my life since I've been here. Right? I'm sitting at the parole table where I used to sit at one end being scrutinized and beat up. Now I'm sitting on the side with them and listening to them beating up on this guy. And I just jumped in there. The spirit of recovery just jumped in. I said, wait a minute. You guys brought me down here to try and help this guy get into a program. I have a program for him today. If he leaves today, I will get him in a program today. They all that stuff ceased. All that beating up and all that. It ceased. They said, today? I said, yeah. He got out that next week, and man, he's still in recovery to today. I mean, that is such a blessing. There's something spiritual about that. You know what I mean? That ain't no mystery. That ain't no coincidence. Stuff like that. And if you think about your own life in recovery, kind of think back on some of the stuff that's transpired in your life and see if you can't connect that up to something. Spirituality, let me talk a little bit about that. When I first heard the word spirituality, what came to me was obviously religion, right? And I had that confused. You know, even though religion and spirituality is synonymous, but they're two different things, right? That's why our books say this is a spiritual, not religious program, right? We're not guided by dogma and rules and regulations and all that stuff. You know, we have some principles that we run by. We have some traditions that we, but it's not about unifying us and all that kind of stuff, right? Spirituality, what I'm starting to find out, what I understand today in our Living Clean book, it kind of addresses the spirituality thing. Spirituality has something to do with connections. It has something to do with relationships. It has something to do with my state of being, my state of mind, my state of body. It has something to do with how, you know, how I respond to you. It has something to do with my integrity. It has something to do with dignity. Some stuff that wasn't even in my vocabulary in my addiction. You know what I mean? It was about get down, get out the way and all that craziness. Now I come to recovery, man, and there's these connections. You ever, I'm going to give you just a tidbit. This is something that I do. I don't do it as much as I should, but when somebody comes across my mind and they're in recovery, they don't have to be in recovery. I'll call that person, right? Just to call and say, man, I'm just calling. You came across my mind. I didn't want nothing. And you'd be surprised what starts happening. Conversation just takes off. Boom. Man, I'm glad you called. Da-da-da. Next thing you know, we're off into some stuff. That's a spiritual thing. You know, there ain't nothing about the, there ain't no coincidence, right? And so that guy, I'll go back to my story a little bit in recovery. And so I moved on and I'm in another agency and I became a manager, some stuff and all kinds of stuff without any, and people, there were some naysayers in our recovery, hate to say it, but there are, you know, I call them blessing busters, but they were telling me, man, you can't get that. You don't have the credentials for that and da-da-da-da-da-da. But there were some other people in my life said, man, go for it. See what happens. Go for it. And every time I go for it, man, it materializes, right? And so this recovery thing, when I admit my powerlessness and understand that, you know, I'm not, when I say I'm powerless, when we say we're powerless, that doesn't mean that we're helpless and hopeless. I think some people get that confused, right? Powerless only means for me today is I have no control over external things. You know, my control comes, what I need to be concentrating on is my spiritual life. And what I mean when I say my spiritual life is my inner life. When I take care of my inner life, my spiritual life, all that other stuff kind of takes care of itself. You ever notice that? It kind of pans out. And that's called the hope. That's called the trust. The first step talks about, you know, the powerlessness and the unmanageability of my life. Today, you know, the unmanageability is not so much external anymore. It's more internal. It's more emotional. I still get caught up in my feelings and all that stuff. The 10th step kind of addresses that for me. Right? The 10th step tells me to check out my motives. Why am I responding? Why am I feeling? A lot of times I'm doing better than I'm feeling. You know, sometimes I just feel like, yuck. Don't know where it's coming from and none of that stuff. But what I'm learning, what recovery teaches me, is to walk through all that stuff. Right? You're powerless over how you might feel, but you're not powerless over what you do. I don't have to act. My feelings today don't always dictate how I respond to life. Before, man, that's how I rolled. I rolled off of feelings. I just rolled. If I feel bad, I got to go get high. You know, today, the feelings don't dictate. And so moving on from that, once I find this power of example, which somebody like you guys was showing me and teaching me, I came to believe in my own power, right? I became a power, example of the power, right? And that power that we become examples of is the things that the newcomer is looking at. You know, they used to tell us back in the, you know, they would tell us, and they probably still do, get a book, read the book, study the book, work some steps, and live it. And here's something in our area. I don't know if they do this in your area, but newcomers will come in and they'll be on fire, right? They'll be rah, 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 right? They'll be on fire. And we tell them, yeah, get the book, you know, share and do what you got to do, work the steps. And when they start doing that, we'd be telling them, you need to just kind of shut up. You know, you overnight wonder. I mean, that's a mixed message, man. You know what I mean? That is a mixed message. So I don't do that to guys. No, I used to. But I don't do that. I'd be telling them, oh, man, keep doing what you're doing. Keep doing what you're doing. Don't worry about what people say. Because what I found out, you come to your own understanding. I had to come to my own understanding. They used to do that to me. Because I used to always, I'm a good book guy. Back in the day, you know, I could quote the book and all that stuff. I was a real good book guy. But I didn't have the experience to go along with the book. And they used to tell me something, you need to check the book out and that, that, that. And somebody told me, man, you just keep doing what you're doing and things is going to work out. You have to talk this stuff before you can walk this stuff. I believe that. You have to understand what this stuff is doing and what's happening in this spiritual program that we have here. How? I believe this, and I talk about God a lot. God, if that word repels you, just think about good orderly direction. That's how I had to do in the beginning because I came in and my God concept was real distorted. It was real because I come from a real strict religious background and some things happened in that institution that kind of disillusioned me at a young age. And so my belief system started getting a little faulty, right? And when I came into recovery and I got around the third step, I told my sponsor, I said, man, I don't know about this God stuff and all this stuff, right? And he said, well, what's the problem? And I started telling about some of my experiences as a kid with, you know, religion and, you know, the guy behind the podium and all that stuff. And he said, well, check this out, man. Write down some things when you think that you got yourself out of some stuff in your addiction. You know, I started writing some stuff, and that thing I wrote, I told y'all about the guy that found me in the woods. What happened that day was I came out, and I hadn't been really using heroin. I was drinking and doing other stuff, and I wanted some heroin this day. And there was somebody out there, a girl that I used to know, and she was selling heroin. And I told her, give me two of them. She said, you can't have no two of these. I said, that's what I was doing before. Give me two. She said, well, I'm going to tell you what. I'm going to take you to my house, and there's a couple of us going up there to get high, and you come with us. I went with them, and next thing I know, I woke up in the hospital. And little was I to know that they had threw me out in the woods. They took me from her house and put me up. It wasn't so much the woods. It was like a little area in Homewood. It's called Singer Place. It was a wooded area. And threw me out the car. Put me out there. And now I was writing that stuff and tears started coming down my eyes, right? And I was like, and it just hit me. It just hit me. Boom. Now, was that a coincidence? All the times that I OD'd and fell out and went back, I was just a greedy addict, just greedy. I'd fall out, go to the hospital. They'd bring me back around and I'd come right back out and go to the same guy, fall out again, just greedy, right? And I thought about it, and I was writing this stuff on my third step. Back then, we didn't have the working guide and all that stuff. We had some guides that we got. And I was writing this stuff, man, and it just, I was overwhelmed. Let me tell you another experience about my third step. I was on my third step. There was a friend of ours. He suffered from cancer, and he was a real great guy. Man, he's a real popular guy in our area. And he was on his deathbed. He was a vet. We all went up to the Veterans Administration. You know, we went there. And I went to his room and I was in the room by myself with him. And I said, man, how you feeling, man? How you feeling? And he looked up at me and he started laughing. He said, Gordon. And he said, Gordon, I'm filled with God. I mean, things like that, man. Things like that. I don't want to get more, but I'm just talking about my experiences, man, on a spiritual level, right? I had a sponsee. He was getting ready to pass over. And we went up to his house. And we were talking and running, kicking it, and he had the cirrhosis of the liver and all that stuff we get when we heroin users and all that stuff. And we were getting ready to leave. And he said, Spons, he said, man, we've been through a whole lot together. I said, I know, man, we've been through a lot. He had about, at the time, he had about 17 years, I think. He said, we've been through a lot together. He said, but one thing I got to ask you, Spons, before you leave. I said, what's that? He said, how did I get through this one? And the friend that was with us, he looked at him and said, man, just do what you've been doing. Keep praying. Keep praying. And then shortly after, man, he was gone. Things like that, man, that is such a blessing. That is such an honor to be in the midst of that kind of stuff, man. I don't know if any of you guys have ever experienced any of that stuff, man, but that is such an honor. That is such a blessing. And that's happened to me throughout this process, throughout this recovery, man. And that, you know what that tells me? You know, it's something about us, and I'll talk about me. It's something about me as an addict, and I think we all suffer from this stuff. We always look at the what's going on wrong or what's bad about us and, you know, the defects of character. But I don't think that we ever look at and the goodness, man, the goodness of us. You know, the things that we share, the things that we do, you know, with the people that's in our lives. Our family members, man, my family members now are so proud of me. Like my sister, at the end of my road, my sister told me, don't tell nobody you're my brother. She was so embarrassed, man. You know what I mean? Don't tell them, right? And so I got 3 years clean, right? And I went up to, I said, hey, sis, I got 3 years clean today. She said, so fucking what? Right? I mean, she was not impressed. She was not impressed. But years later, just like we have to come to believe, our loved ones got to come to believe too. Right? Because, I mean, I told them the same old tired lie all the time. It's going to be different this time. I swear to God, I ain't going to do it. The next thing you know, I did the same thing. Today, that same sister told me, don't tell nobody you're my brother. I think she owed me $200 today. I mean, you know what I mean? I've made my amends. That's a living amends. You know what I mean? It's one thing to say, yeah, I'm sorry and all, but there's another thing to change our behaviors and do something different. I know, man, that I'm preaching to the choir, but just think about your family and how they come to you, how they respect you, how they're looking at you with different eyes now. Newcomer, don't get upset because your mom and them or whoever your family, your loved ones don't believe you. Don't get upset. Because just think about all the times you told them that same old tired lie. Again, they have to come to believe just like we have to come to believe. Once they come to believe, man, the sky's the limit. You know? So I don't know how much time I got, Drew. He ain't tell me no time thing. He's like throwing his hands up. How much time I got, Drew?
Whatever you're done, you're done.
Oh, it's one of those things. I ain't going to keep y'all too long, right? I've been running my mouth. If I start asking that question, I know it's time to go, right? But I just want to say to the newcomer, anybody that's new around here, an old-timer, new-timer, whatever it is, man, stay here. Stay here. This Zoom platform, man, at first I was rebellious. I was kicking and screaming about this stuff, man. I ain't going on no Zoom. There ain't no meeting. That ain't no real meeting. Man, but I'm here to tell you, if it wasn't for this Zoom stuff and this telephone meeting, I don't know what would happen for me. I've been on some international meetings, man, and I'm here to tell you, a lot of those people, man, this is the first time or their first experience with Narcotics Anonymous. They've never been to an in-house meeting. They've only been on Zooms and telephones. Just imagine that. So that tells me that there's something going on around here. You hear what I'm saying? They say that this is a God-given program, right? Yeah, we can mess some things up, but this is a God-given program. You know, just to talk about traditions a little bit, I was blessed, I mean, incredibly blessed to be one of the co-founders of the Tri-Area Narcotics Meeting Convention, right? And I'd been wanting to do an area convention for years, And it came to me, and I had the time, and I went to a guy, and he said, yeah, let's do it. So we're in our fifth year now. Due to the COVID, we couldn't have it this year. But that was such a learning experience, man, to be in that atmosphere and to put on a try, you know, and start a convention. You know, it's hard. That is hard, starting from the ground up and trying to, and I got all kinds of pushback, things like, oh, that's a black convention. Why are y'all trying to compete with Start to Live? Why are you stepping on Start to Live's feet? And I'm saying, how am I stepping on Start to Live's feet? Their feet too big. I can't talk about it. They've been around 30 years, more than 30 years. Shut up, right? But we're the only town that don't have an area convention, right? And see, I go to different areas. I go out of town, speak out of town. So I know that there's different, you know, every big town, every metropolitan town has an area convention and a regional convention. And Pittsburgh was the only one that didn't have an area convention. And so we started it, and, you know, here we are in our fifth year. So I'm really blessed about that. I don't talk about that a whole lot. There's a lot of things that I've done in this recovery, man, that I don't talk about. You know, somebody said you need to talk about it because people need to know. Not that you did it, but it can be done. So, I don't know. I'm getting ready to babble, Drew, and I'm going to start babbling. That means I'm getting ready to start telling lies, and I better shut on up. So, I want to thank y'all, man, for your patience, man, and just please keep coming back, man. Please stay here. You know, I need to see you guys. I need to see that God is still in America working business. I know he's working in my life. I love to see him when he's working in other folks' life. So thanks for letting me share. Thank you.